All right, back for another great episode here this week on The Big Ticket Life. Love that you're here. Love that you like the show. If you haven't yet subscribed, please do so. I'd love for you to do that. Helps me get the show out. Get great guests like my guest today, Josh Champion, with me. We're going to be talking about culture, building great teams, leading people in a meaningful way. Helps me spread those messages. So give me a like, give me a follow, subscribe wherever you're checking this out, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, or on audio. We're on all the major players too. So we'd love for you to do that. And yeah, we're a video podcast show. That is a thing. We can make our own rules here in podcasting. So we get to do lots of fun stuff with video. But I'm excited to have Josh here on the phone today. Or not on the phone. Gee whiz, what did I just do? Transport back to 1997? My gosh, I just went off. Talk about a total slip of the mind. Man, I just totally said, this great show. We're in all these mediums. And I'm like, yeah, dial it up rotary style on the phone. Man, not at all on the phone. Josh, welcome to the show. Connecting with us through the power of technology here today on The Big Ticket Life. Thank you for taking out the time today to join us.
Certainly. I mean, I heard Instagram was down, so it's time to actually pull out those phones and use them what they were designed for, right? Like it's right. Phone calls. That's what I'm all about.
That's right. Yeah. Sometimes there is goodness in just picking up the phone and connecting with somebody. We'll definitely touch on that. But, you know, as we were getting to know each other a little more deeper, having a little behind the scenes discussion before we launched, I noticed that one of the charities you like to support is Mentors International. Let's kick off the show right there. Why is that important to you and why do you support them?
You know, I was introduced to the organization probably over a decade ago. They were presenting at a conference that I was at. And, you know, their overall message is a hand up, never a hand out. And, you know, the idea is that if you just give to people and, expect really nothing in reciprocity, that's a great thing to do. But in order to really truly have someone elevate their game, elevate their skills and be able to take, you know, what you've given them and have that money compound on itself, it's more of a hand up, not a handout. So they deliver micro loans to entrepreneurs in third world countries, you know, so literally like the village market, you know, or the little chicken farm, you know. And so these little micro loans can really make a huge positive impact on their lives and, you know, helps them send their children to school, you know, which is a new generational change that maybe the parents didn't have, that they're now trying to pass that along to their kids. But all the microloans are repaid back into the system and then redistributed. So it's a really great program I've been a part of for a very long time. And, I didn't grow up in a third world country at all, but I did grow up in a trailer park in the middle of Kansas. And so my entrepreneurial journey is very much a rags to riches story. And so, it's just another way for me to kind of feel like, hopefully I'm making a positive impact on, the next Josh Cunningham in some other country who is growing up, broke as a joke and looking for some opportunity to help people solve problems and create some value in other people's lives. And, that's the age old secret to success is you can get what you want by helping other people get what they want as well. So something I've been involved with for quite some time.
Yeah, very cool. And, you might have said it in a jokingly way, the chicken farm, but that's actually that's really a reality. You know, I witnessed it last month. I was in Guatemala visiting my father who lives there in retirement, and his brother and sister-in-law there have a medical mission up in the, 10,000 foot in the mountains in San Rafael Al Adora is the town, the village. And literally that's a subsistence existence. It's take the chickens to market today that we're growing, and that money we earn later this morning or early afternoon pays for dinner on the way home tonight and breakfast tomorrow morning, and then we repeat that all over again.
Yep.
My uncle pointed out selling firewood is a big thing too, as is sand.
Wow.
And the sand thing's interesting.
What's the sand about?
So the sand thing is, the terrain in Guatemala, at least in this part, the sand is really great for concrete and mortar. If you know anything about the nation's history, 35-ish years ago, late 70s, there was an earthquake that killed 40,000 people. And the buildings just, they were adobe brick. They just collapsed. you know, wasn't sturdy. So now anything that's built concrete block, rebar and mortar down through the concrete block. So mortar and masonry is a big thing. It's all, pretty much how all the buildings are built. So the sand, the villagers and people for what we would call a side hustle, but it's their way to exist and provide. Yeah. They literally just pull off the side of the road and dig sand out, and they'll go in, like, create these mines and caverns and tunnels. And you know, here in the U.S. it would be like shut down in a heartbeat. Yeah. But it's just what they do. And again, it is this subsistence living. And so I just touch on it because of what Mentors International does. I've seen it my own eyes firsthand. I've seen my uncle referenced in relation to firewood. He says, yeah, that person was smart. They actually bought a wood splitter. Mm-hmm. That's powered by a generator. And I guess they already had the generator, but they bought this wood splitter and it's in this co-op and there's a few different things they do. So that microloan program, really, I can't say they got a specific Mentors International loan, but I've seen what it can do. I've seen when people get that hand up, what can happen. So pretty wild to kick off that way.
Yeah. And we have so many analogies that relate to our life here in the States, you know, of that one simple tool that can make a huge positive impact in your life, you know, being able to have access to it, being able to have the education and the information as to its effectiveness. So it's a good analogy there.
Yeah. So you love what Mentors International does and, you know, their focus is helping abroad, but you've helped 400 Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Students. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So, my business is Rockerbox. We started, just over a decade ago when we celebrated our 10-year anniversary this summer.
Congratulations. But
essentially I was in the real estate space working for a marketing firm and I was traveling the country, going to all the different seminars and, you know, big speaking events and masterminds, and every room that I was in, I heard about the same common frustration. And it was that all these real estate agents and these team leaders were generating an abundance of leads and their agents were doing a terrible job of following up with them. And so, you know, like any good path to entrepreneurship, you find a problem, figure out how to solve it, and then scale it and sell it. And so that's exactly what I did. But sort of one of the cornerstones of the success of the business was, well, who are we going to get to do all this work? And at that point in time, really, the only solution was to just hire a VA in the Philippines, you know, and then train them, you know, over the phone on what they need to do. But, you know, I'm a big believer that there's three significant keys to success. There's the systems and processes that are predictable and duplicatable in your business, that, you know, you get a predictable result with the predictable input, but you've got to have the right talent for following those systems. And so again, a lot of people are just outsourcing this over the seas, maybe providing minimal amount of training and support. Yeah. But the third key is having a 5-star company culture, which is the foundation for the systems to always be improving, right? Because your business always has to be evolving and changing and growing, and for the talent to always continue to develop. So when I thought, where am I going to find my talent? You know, I went to school at Texas A&M a long time ago. Not sure if you've heard any good Aggie jokes lately, but it actually is a very prestigious university. It's one of the, you know, top two schools here in Texas. And, you know, there's over 55,000 students right across the street. And so I thought, well, why don't I take this opportunity and bring it to these Texas A&M students? And essentially, this is the part-time job I wish that I had had when I was in school, because they're able to master the fundamental skills of your entry-level sales position, right? Learning scripts, learning objection handlers, learning how to manage a CRM, you know, learning how to set expectations and listen to understand and make strong recommendations. Like, all of those skills apply to wherever you go in sales. In fact, not even sales alone. We've had students.
It expands to other careers.
Yeah. We've had students that have worked for us that were engineer majors, you know, which is typically these are the people that aren't super social and don't like to talk to people. But because they mastered those skills while they were here, when they moved on in their professional career, it elevated their ability to rise to the top and assume leadership positions and get promoted very quickly or skip entry-level positions. And so, you know, over the last 10 years, we've hired over 400 Texas A&M students and, you know, put them through our training process, and they worked for us for, you know, several years. And then they graduate walking the stage with multiple job offers. Or like I said, making more money than their peers. And so that's something that we've been incredibly proud of because it's a win-win-win situation. You know, our clients get a really high quality phone call because it's, you know, US-based, you know, college educated, English first speaking. And then, you know, the impact that it makes on the lives of our callers is that they get to create those experiences that they never would, selling sneakers at the mall or, you know, beers at the local tavern. And then it gives them, you know, the connections that will set them up for success in their young professional career. So that's what we've been very proud of for the last decade.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I love how you broke that down. Systems, talent, the five-star foundation. We'll begin to unpack that. You know, anecdotally, one of my businesses is in the mattress and furniture industry. I co-own a retail mattress store. And so I'm in an industry Facebook group and somebody's asking about, hey, I really don't like taking the time to update product listings and products on Shopify. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm aware of this business owner and, you know, the reality is the business isn't at a point where it would justify this. But that wasn't one of the advice that I gave. The advice that I gave was very similar to what you said. You've got systems, you've got talent, and you've got that five-star foundation. It isn't as simple as just, oh, I can find somebody overseas that can do this, whether it's through an agency, Fiverr. There's some other ones out there. I think they since shut the doors, but there's probably dozens of talent agencies out there, right? And I said, it's just not as simple as that. You can't just turn this over, even with, you know, you can have secure access and stuff. Yeah. You need to have your SOPs in place, that bare minimum. And then you got to find the person that's going to take it. And so what are some ways that you've seen people fail with this process and then the ways of success? And obviously they're going to probably lean to your great three-part approach of systems, talent, and five-star experience.
Well, I mean, one of the failures that I can speak of is my own. you know, when we first started the business over 10 years ago, there was a glaring problem in the real estate space. So we knew that there was a problem and we started to roll out our solution. And so in the very early days, like our business caught like wildfire. You know, we were just blowing up. There was already so much demand. We finally were marketing that we had a solution to that problem. And so people were practically, you know, throwing their money at us. And that's a good situation to be in. Really good problem to have that we couldn't really keep up with the demand. And, you know, I'm sure many of you may have been there before. You would love to be there. And so we were hiring as many people as we could, you know, as fast as we possibly could. And you had a simple job posting on A&M's website. And then students were sending us their resumes. We're calling the new applicants. We're inviting them in for an interview. And pretty much if they had a pulse, they were hired right on the spot. How many of you have ever done the pulse hiring process, you know? And so, you know, we had this young man, he came in for his first training shift. You know, let's say his name was Doug, right? And, you know, when you have a new team member.
Totally not Doug.
Yeah. It's, you have that moment where you get really excited for Doug. You know, you're like, hey, just really thrilled about all the stuff he's going to take off of our plate. You know, you're going to offload some stuff. You're going to, we paired him up with his trainer for the shift. Her name was McKinley. And she starts explaining to him all the stuff that he's going to do and how he's going to help us out and what his roles are going to be and what his responsibilities are and, you know, just all the different ways that he was going to be a part of the team. So we're super excited about Doug's first day. We're about 30 minutes into Doug's training and he politely asks to be excused to go to the bathroom. No problem. You know, 5 minutes go by, 10 minutes go by. 15 minutes later, okay, now we're a little scared. Did this guy fall in, right? Is he okay? Like, do we need to send someone to check on him? So McKinley, the trainer, asks another guy in the office. She says, hey, why don't you go check on Doug? He said he was going to the bathroom, but it's been a while, you know? And that's when her suspicions were confirmed. He was gone. Poof. Disappeared. Gone like a Blockbuster video store. And, you know, it was devastating, you know? My trainer, McKinley, she was one of our top employees at the time. I mean, she was just absolutely heartbroken. She's like, what did I do wrong? Right. And, you know, but once we really kind of look at the situation here, as a leader of the organization, you got to understand like the failure's on you, right? The failure was on me. It was a failure on my mistake because where we had failed Doug and where we had failed McKinley was that we failed to make it really clear what to our new employees, like what the expectations of this role entailed. You know, we didn't set the standards for how highly productive our work environment was. I mean, we're making a ton of phone calls all day, every day, and not a lot of people are just naturally drawn to that type of work. You know, we didn't show them what the standards were, and whether or not he was going to be able to meet or exceed it. And so, you know, because of that, we were bringing the wrong people into the organization. I mean, I'm sure many of you have noticed, you know, people show you the best version of themselves in an interview, right? True or true?
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that your business is going to be the right environment for them to really thrive in. So now we're running the risk of having the wrong people, wrong seat, in the wrong bus, headed in the wrong direction. And those are the type of people that just drag their feet, you know, punching in, punching out until they finally one day muster up the courage to quit, you know, or do something dumb enough to actually get fired. Or like Doug, just disappear, you know, in the bathroom. You know, we never heard from that guy ever again. And so, you know, having that kind of a turnover can be really expensive for your organization. You know, there's so many different domino effects of that type of turnover in your organization. And I'm sure we've all been there before, right? Nobody's perfect. Yeah. And so finally, we decided to implement one of the most important steps of our interview process. And this is a tool that saves us countless hours every single day, every single year, every single month, endless amounts of money, and an infinite number of headaches. And so, you know, I'm sure you've probably heard of this. Smart people learn from their mistakes, right? But I always like to add to that, smarter people learn from other people's mistakes. So learn from my mistake here today. So here's what it is. This is what we implemented. It's what we call it is an observation. And our observation comes at the conclusion of our in-person interview. So, you know, we've scanned their resume. We've done a personality assessment. We did a phone interview. They came in for the in-person interview. We're really impressed. We really like this person. But basically what we tell them at the end of this interview, we say, you know, well, Mr. Candidate, I've been really impressed with your qualifications, your responses to the questions today. The next step in our interview process is to bring you back in for an observation. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to pair you up with one of our most senior associates, and they're going to give you a full tour of the operation. So this is essentially your interview of us. That's the best way of putting it, right? Because we've been asking them all the questions. We want them to come in and ask us as many questions as possible so that they can leave with a very clear understanding of not only what we do every single day, day in and day out, hour in and hour out, how we actually do it. So like the technology that we use, the dialer systems, the CRMs, but most importantly, why we do what we do. I'm sure many of you read the book, Start With Why, right? Simon Sinek. Mm-hmm. But you've got to be a purpose-driven organization. So we want people to really see that and be able to feel it for themselves and understand whether or not they connect with that. And so then we tell them, hey, once you leave, you know, go home, marinate on it, collect your thoughts, you know, sleep on it if you need to, but then shoot us an email and let us know what you think. And, you know, basically we get one of two responses. One is we get like a persuasive essay from this candidate saying, these are all the things that I saw. I feel connected to this. I feel challenged by this. You know, I want to be a part of this organization. And that's the signs of having a really strong company culture. Or the opposite is most of them, they give us a no, just like Doug did. They just walk off the face of the planet. We never see them ever again. And so that's a really important step in our process to make sure that we're bringing the right people into the organization, not just because we thought that they would fit, but we're giving them the opportunity to decide whether or not they fit with us. And so, I mean, we started that probably 8 years ago in our hiring process.
Very smart.
Saved us a ton of time and energy and headache. So that would be very one smart. Of the mistakes I would love to share with the group here today.
Yeah, a few things to commentate on there. And I always like to have our guests share their brilliance because that's why we're all here. You know, is to get great perspectives from great guests. So thank you. You know, two things on that. Actually, three. First one is that a paid day for that person to observe? Are they compensated?
Actually, no. No, they haven't been onboarded yet, haven't put through orientation. So truthfully, when we first started this, it was like, hey, we can pretty much train a person for free for an hour, right? Let's overwhelm them. Let's teach them everything that they're going to know. So that way there's no question as to what it is they're doing. So it's unpaid at first hour.
Okay. And that's interesting. That's cool. But it again, it's part of the interview process. And anymore, I mean, the interview process, I think, as most people on both sides of the equation have found, is it is best done over a series of steps. Mm-hmm. So you're just molding a step that's very applicable. Mm-hmm. So you don't get the Doug bathroom walkout, mm-hmm. which is painful mm-hmm. for both. And that was my one observation. So was Doug's original training, was that compensated or was that just part of your interview process?
Yeah. I mean, we had onboarded him as an employee. We had put him through the orientation. Okay. And so it was his first yep. training ship. He walks in and he's like, oh, wait, this is what's going on here. Right. So, yeah. So that was why we had the very quick reflection that, you know, this was our fault. We kind of, I'm sure many yep. of you have been recruited by an MLM once before, where your random buddy from college hits you up and is like, hey, what's yep. going on, man? I'm living my dream life now. I'm just sipping pina coladas on the beach.
It's like you just had this happen.
Yeah, my manager's just coming in town and we want to meet you for lunch. And so we never want to sell people on the opportunity. We just want to present it to them and hope that they're magnetically attracted to it. So that's kind of the idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's work.
Yeah. Did Doug ever ask for his 30, 45 minutes, whatever it was, of his paycheck?
I mean, we put everybody on direct deposit, so he got it somehow. Okay. Like, you know, yeah, gotcha. I'm sure he got his, you know, $8 or whatever it was.
Yeah. I mean, I bring that up because I
had to file it.
Yeah, the most important thing that you touched on that I feel there is about leadership, you know, and it was about McKinley. And McKinley's first response was, I feel so bad. What did I do wrong? And I think everything in entrepreneurial success begins and ends with who leads the company and the culture you build. And the fact that, you know, if there's anything to take away, I mean, obviously you've taken away the lessons you learned, those hard fought lessons, those things you took to heart and the way you improved. But give yourself a pat on the back for at least there was a part of all that process where your leadership, your managers at least got it, like you do as a leader of, hey, it does begin and end with me. Mm-hmm. And so kudos to McKinley for recognizing that in the moment. Is she still with the company?
She's not. She graduated probably 6 years ago and she's skyrocketed through her professional career.
Good for her. So, yeah. Good for her. But I wanted to touch on that because it's easy to blame a whole lot of things. It always begins and ends with the leader. We're responsible, right? We're the captain of the ship, so to say. And if the culture's bad, it's on us. So, man, I love that you shared all that. So digging into the talent aspect of things, right? Because you touched on the systems, but you gave us an example of systems. And I should also add what Josh just shared. I mean, you know, you can apply anywhere. I'm just thinking we've gone through at the retail store. We have gone through an immense 15 months of hiring delivery drivers. It's not a career anybody really aspires to. It's more one of those in between jobs. Often we get a lot of folks with criminal record applying. And I've got a good heart and I'm willing to let some things come into the company. Others I just cannot, because that business, we do business in your bedroom. That's one of my lines. Because we're in your personal private bedroom. And I can't have somebody who's been charged with theft or worse in that space. Can't do it. Because if a question comes up, I really don't have a leg to stand on, right? And so it's been difficult. But that little tweak on onboarding, and it dawns on me, gee whiz, we could have people come and I would pay them. Well, like we would pay them because it's physical manual labor.
Yeah.
But they could ride on our truck for the day and see how they work. I think if you've got a blue collar business, you can bring people out on a construction site or bring them out in the service truck.
Yeah.
See how that goes. Yeah. You know, if they're falling asleep in the passenger seat all day, probably not a good fit, right? Yeah. Not engaged.
Yeah, exactly.
But great little tweak there to the process. Love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate it. Yeah. It's been very key for us. You know, I mean, we're a call center. We're making calls all day, every day. You're right. It's not something that somebody's going to be, you know, drawn to initially, unless you show them the meaning behind the work.
Right. Right. Yeah. So touch on that meaning behind the work.
Well, I mean, like I say, from day one, we've always been a purpose-driven organization. We say that our purpose is to move people forward. And so, you know, the problem that we were solving was helping people move forward through the sales pipeline. You know, they've got this abundance of leads. Not all of them are serious and motivated. You know, a small percentage of them are. So it takes a lot of calls, text messages, emails to figure out who they are to move them forward through the sales pipeline. And so that was the initial problem that we solved. But in you know, taking a step back to look at the impact that that work made on everybody's lives that were involved, you know, these real estate team owners are now being able to give their agents hot leads instead of just cold leads. And so that allows them to accelerate their, you know, real estate career much quicker than most people that just enter the business as a me, myself, and I operation. And then the team leader who decided to sign up for us because they were, you know, losing tons of sleep over, you know, all these leads falling through the cracks. Well, now they've got this leveraged team of professionals that are solving this problem for them so they can focus their attention on other projects or other higher income producing activities. So that's allowed them to grow their business and their life as well. And then, of course, the callers here in our world headquarters in College Station, Texas is seeing the impact that this work makes on their lives. You know, that we really try to emphasize this to our current employees. But for a lot of them, honestly, no matter what we do, it really doesn't hit home until they leave, because that's when they start sitting into interviews. That's when they start joining internship programs or, you know, just moving on in their professional career. And they're like, wow, you know, I had all these interviews and they never once asked me about my GPA. You know, they never once asked me about my course load. You know, they never once asked me about all these extracurriculars that I was involved in. Instead, they wanted to know about Rockerbox. You know, I mean, how many graduating college candidates put on their resume that they've made thousands of phone calls for hundreds of real estate agents all across the country, generating millions of dollars in revenue on their behalf. And it's an incredible world experience that they can, you know, speak to. And it definitely differentiates them from their peers. So, you know, that's kind of what gets me out of bed each and every day. That's what makes me excited to continue to move forward. I mean, we've had a challenging real estate industry over the last couple of years. But again, when you're a purpose-driven organization, you know, I say culture isn't just something that happens when everything else is aligned. You know, culture is really, it's the foundation. It's the foundation that you build everything upon. So the good times and the bad, you know, you use your core values as your guiding North Star to the decisions that you're going to make and the actions you're going to take. And so that's your recipe. You know, that's, as business owners and leaders, we're always focused on results. You know, and it's something that we're guilty of. It's the reason why some of us are, you know, more successful than others, is we're result driven, right? Got to get to the end, the bottom line, right? Profits, margin, revenue, sales, the results. But we need to really take a step back and figure out, where do those results come from? Well, the results come from the actions that we take. And the actions that we take are highly influenced by the way that we feel. Right? The psychological and emotional state that we're in at the time. You know, if you wake up and you're having a bad day, something bad comes across your plate, what's going to be your response to that? It's probably going to be negative and bad.
Yep.
But if you're just having a great time and you've got a really positive energy and really positive attitude about things, and then something comes your way that's not as, you know, desirable, then you're just going to, you know, brush it to the side. You're going to continue moving forward through positive action. So your emotional state, your emotional being, is really what drives a lot of our action, which drives the results. And when you ask yourself, well, where what comes before the feelings, right? Well, what comes before the feelings is the thoughts and the beliefs that we have, and that comes from the things that we give attention to. So as a business, that belief system are your core values. And if you truly surround yourself with a group of individuals that believe in the same things, then that's when you don't need to be there to micromanage every single step of the process. You know, I'm very proud to say that in 2017, I had built like a true business, like the way that, you know, Robert Kiyosaki defines a business versus self-employed. Self-employed, you own a job, you show up to every single day. A business, you own systems and processes that employees show up to every day. And I had worked myself out of the day-to-day grind of the business. And in 2017, I packed up my bags and moved to San Diego. I always wanted to live in downtown San Diego with 75 degree weather all day, every day.
Yep.
And
one of the most beautiful places in the country.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I had the freedom to do that because of the culture that we had built, right? Because I didn't need to be around to make every single decision. Not everything had to be bottlenecked across my desk, because there was a culture that existed where we had a group of people that all believed in the same thing. And so you knew that those, you know, the core values would guide the decisions that they make. You know, as a leader of an organization, it's not necessarily about people believing what you say, but that they believe that you believe in what you say.
Yeah. I love that. So I've had guests on in the past and I've stumped them with what I'm about to ask. And I'm positive this isn't going to be the case because culture in your business isn't just represented with one of those nice, you know, 12 by 18 or 36 pieces of art you buy on Amazon or the corporate art buzzword store. actually, I need to buy that domain, corporateartbuzzwordstore.com. It would be a hit. Core values and culture would be the number one sellers. So what are your core values in the company?
So it starts with having fun while being the best. And that's actually a core value. To be completely honest, I ripped it off from Best Buy. That was my first job that I had out of high school. I was a computer nerd slinging, you know, desktops and laptops in the early 2000s. And what I found was I got a job at Best Buy just because I like computers. But what I found was I had a really unique ability to help people solve problems through my knowledge, through my product expertise. And so I had a lot of fun doing that. And because I had a lot of fun, I was really good at it. And so it was just this constant, you know, reciprocal cycle that I was in where I was very proud of my ability to help people. I was very excited to guide people to make good decisions. And, you gotta be able to show up to work and have fun every day. So that's our first one is have fun while being the best, derived from one of my previous work experiences. Right after that, you know, and these are in any order, but, earn respect while demonstrating respect. And so, you know, we work with the general public, you know, I mean, anybody in the world could land on one of these websites in any real estate market. And next thing you know, a couple minutes later, we're on the phone talking with them. And so we have no idea if they don't have two nickels to rub together. Or if there may be some famous celebrity. I mean, it's happened before. We've talked to, over the last 10 years, we've handled over 3 million internet leads. So we've talked to a lot of different people. And, you know, not only does that, is it important with the people that we're talking to over the phone that are complete strangers, but also, our group of team members here in the office as well. And our clients, of course, that if you ever, people get all stirred up all the time about feeling disrespected. But, you know, our core value is that the only way that you can command respect is to first demonstrate it, right? It's something that you give first before you receive. So in respect by demonstrating respect. Number three, I love this one. This is a very entrepreneurial core value. And here we are even 10 years today and we still preach it like it's the, you know, one of the values of the company. And that is the only source of job security is a satisfied customer. So you know, the business grows, the business evolves, more positions are created.
Love that one.
Positions disappear, you know, responsibilities are moved from seat to seat. But at the end of the day, what are you doing to help solve a problem? What are you doing to put a smile on a customer's face? Because if you can't answer that question very well, then you're obviously not in a state of productivity, right? So the only source of job security is a happy and satisfied customer. It started on day one when we had zero customers and then we found a customer to make happy, you know, and then it happens even here today where we're 10 years down the road and, you know, we still have clients that are happy to be partnered with us in business. And so the only source of job security is a satisfied customer. Another one is it's all about a win-win-win situation. So we act in the best interest of our company, our customers, and our coworkers. And so, you know, this one comes from, again, all of these were derived from my previous, you know, professional experiences, the jobs that I loved, that I wanted to emulate, and the jobs that I despised, that I wanted nothing at all to do with. And so I'm sure
lessons learned, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we've all heard the age old statement, you know, the customer's always right. You know, how many of you ever heard that? It's definitely big in like retail and the service industry, but you know, that's not necessarily true, right? This should be a harmonious relationship between everybody involved, voluntary relationship. You know, that's what a transaction should be, voluntary. There should be a high enough value, you know, and a high enough payout that it's voluntary between both parties. So the customer isn't always right, right? So it's the customers, our company, and our coworkers. You know, I love the old movie, what is it called? Office Space, where Bill Lumberg brings in the consultants and they hang up the big banner and it says, "Is this good for the company?" Right. And it's just an exaggerated, you know, way of that whole soul sucking, cold, you know, corporate environment that the only thing that matters is, you know, the stock price, you know, the company. But, and that's not true either. And so that's why we say, you know, act in the best interest of our company, our customers, and our coworkers. And, let's see. That was four of them, right? Last one here is possess the mindset of a champion. And this one's really important because, you know, just the message, just the idea to share with others that a champion isn't just somebody who does everything perfectly the first time around. Right. That's I think what people, we get into this habit of like taking celebrities or athletes or whatever, and we idolize them and we put them on this pedestal, and then we get heartbroken when we hear that something bad happened in their lives or that they made a wrong choice. That's all just like a myth, you know, that this idea that everybody's just, these people are perfect, right? A champion isn't somebody who does everything perfectly the first time around. A champion is someone who learns from their mistakes. It's someone who learns from other people's mistakes. It's someone who shares those experiences and picks people up and gets them off the ground as well. You know, they fall down 7 times, but they get back up 8. And so that's what a champion is all about. You know, life is going to serve us some adversity. And, you know, adversity is the best university, right? It's the best learning opportunity. And so to know and to have it in our heart, in our beliefs, in our mind that, you know, we're a human capital organization. There's humans that show up here every day and they do work. And with human work comes human error. But, you know, everything's a learning opportunity. Some just cost more than others. And so a champion has that attitude. You know, a champion creates accountability. You know, the reason why the Chiefs were just the Super Bowl champs was because there was lines on the field that were painted. And there was a clock up on the scoreboard that counted down. You know, that's all accountability. Accountability measures, you know, people really shy away from that. Oh, accountability. Oh, that means I'm a mean leader. No, that's not what that means at all. If you have champions in your organization, they're going to crave accountability. They're going to want to be able to measure their performance so that they can show up every day and become a better version of themselves. So that's what that core value is
about. I love it. Man, so much to unpack there. First of all, thank you for being somebody that just doesn't throw around, oh, my company has core values. Like, you can tell if you've heard it and you've seen it on screen. As I said, we do the show video and audio. So always check us out wherever you can pick it up. LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, please subscribe and share. Josh just gave us a lot of great wisdom, but I love that you say, I'm like, you can tell they're a fiber of who you are, how you lead, how your people respond, how they help others, how they lead others. It's fantastic. And, you know, folks, Josh is doing this with like, not what most would call like a sexy business, right? Mm-hmm. Like a sexy business is home theater install. A sexy business is pools. A sexy business is selling exotic cars. Sexy business is like, you know, I don't know, turning 401ks into crypto and gold. It's anything else other than phone leads.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And yet a commitment to human capital, which I love that you said, and I want to, maybe that's where we'll shift next, is talking about growing your humans into better people. Cause that's really where I've been shifting this show into as far as conversations go. And really focusing on that here in my time that I spend with my guests and with my audience. But like, you can tell this exists. And that focus, 2017 is 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You worked your way, built systems, you know, elevated your leadership to the point where you weren't working that job anymore and kind of got to let the business retire you, so to say.
Yeah.
To a destination dream spot in San Diego.
Yeah.
And again, that's the power of core values. It's the power of culture. All around. So let's talk about growing humans, but let's also talk about, and you referenced it. Hey, it's not so much that we're in a down real estate market right now. We're down as far as inventory goes on the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
As I've been told, about 80% nationwide. Is that?
But yeah, that and the, I mean, biggest pulse that we have on the market is the buyer activity. So buyer activity has, you know, been tightened up ever since interest rates went up. So there's, you know, less people in the market. The people that are in the market are less serious. And then the ones that are serious are sometimes having a harder time getting qualified for a loan, you know, for a monthly payment that they can afford.
So you've got the great, I mean, you've got a great foundation for how you've built your company, how your company runs. You've got that win culture, where it has to be good for you, for your client, for your humans, peer to peer. How have you been navigating that, right? Because housing inventory is down, interest rates are up, you know, sellers are like, man, my neighbor sold their house for $150,000. I want that too or more. And so all of that is another point. Like, we're so interconnected in what we do as well, right? Like, we need to set like that earn respect, get respect core value of yours. That could start right away with the buyer who ultimately begins a great relationship with your team, gets transferred to another great real estate team. And now all the way through to that transaction hitting the table, it just might be a really great transaction from start to finish where it's now a win-win-win for everybody.
Yep.
On that side. And that's how connected we are. So how have you been leading your team as things have constrained, as things have become a little more difficult, a little more different?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the questions I was asked a long, long time ago in one of my first leadership positions is, you know, what is it that great leaders create? And most people are like, oh, followers. Yeah, leaders create followers. But the best leaders, they don't create followers. They create leaders, right?
Yeah.
The best leaders create more leaders. And so for me, you know, one of the words that I love, one of the words I despise is entitlement. One of the words that I love is empowerment. And so it's been, again, something that's just ingrained in my fiber of empowering my people, you know, and I made the decision to hire students from Texas A&M, many of them that are working their first part-time job ever. And then a lot of them working their way up through our org chart into leadership positions and becoming leaders for the first time in their life. And yeah, you know, something I'm very proud of. And one of the tools that we've used that I'd be happy to share with the audience here today is our mastermind concept. So way back in the early days when we first started hiring, you know, our talent, and we had now implemented the observation. So we were getting the right people in the door. We made it clear what the expectations were. You know, our prospective employees, they were self-selecting themselves into our highly productive and competitive work environment. It was fun. And it was a lot of energy. People were showing up to work every day, just really moving the company forward. And one day, though, I was kind of faced with a problem. You know, I had all these people coming on board, everybody just generally solving the same problem. And what I realized is that once you have several different people working on achieving the same goal, the problem was that they were all doing it their own darn way. Right? How many of you have ever experienced that before? Right? You've got a whole bunch of troops marching in one direction, but they're all kind of doing it in their own way. So I really began to notice that each individual employee started to create their own little unique habits, you know, some good, others not so great, you know, but from the way they were, you know, talking on the phone, their scripts, their conversations, you know, how they were recording the notes inside of the CRM, how they were overcoming certain objections over the phone, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You name it, the list goes on. Pretty much every single step or variable in our business was being done several different ways. And you know, because of that, now I've got a room full of people giving each other conflicting information and sharing ambiguous best practices. You know, oh, this is how I do it. This is how I do it. And so the, you know, the result is there's a glaring lack of clarity for everybody on the team. And that's not a state that you want to be in. You know, clarity is key. And so, you know, our instructions were about as clear as mud. And so, you know, I saw that this was really going to negatively impact the future scalability of the company, the ability to, you know, duplicate the team, the culture, you know, the predictability for growth, all bad things. And so I was feeling a little overwhelmed. And, you know, as the leader, I felt kind of like I had to come up with all the right ideas. Like I had to correct all of this stuff. That's a lot of weight on your shoulders. And I'm sure many of us have been there before. You know, you got to create the systems and the processes and the standard operating procedures, you know, but I'm the type of guy who doesn't even read the instruction manuals when you get like a new like thing for your little coffee table or the swing set for the kid in the backyard. So the idea of me having to create the SOPs for the business, it made me more anxious than a cat at a dog show. And and so I finally thought, okay, how am I going to fix this? Right. And it made me go back and think about one of the great business classics, Think and Grow Rich. How many of you have ever heard of Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich? Yeah, that's a good one there. Great so, book. You know, for those of you who don't know about it, you got to go Amazon it, audio book it, whatever. But Napoleon Hill, he basically
there's a movie now for crying out loud.
Is there?
Yep.
No way. I didn't know that. Well, I'm gonna have to put that on my wish list there.
Not that you shouldn't read it, because there'll be more power from that. But
exactly.
If you need an intro, it's there.
Yeah. And there's so many like updated versions, but the book was written in like the 1930s. And so Napoleon Hill went out, he studied like 500 of the most successful, wealthiest people of the time. and was trying to look for what the overlap was. What were those common habits? And so in the book, he covers and he discusses the 13 most common characteristics. Obviously, we're not going to talk about all of them today, but really the lesson that applied to this problem was that all successful people understood the importance of masterminding. And so not just with other successful people in their industry, but with their own teams as well. And so I thought, you know, I'd already been kind of exposed to it in the real estate space. That's kind of what gave me the idea for Rockerbox was I'm going to these real estate masterminds where agents get in the same room and they say, I'm struggling with this. I'm doing well with this. Hey, have you tried this? Hey, have you tried that? And they're kind of helping each other and grow and move the group to new heights. So I thought, well, if this is good for the most successful people in business history, then it should be good enough for at least me, you know, and my team. So, so we started masterminds, I mean, probably 8 years ago in the business. And so ever since then, every single month we have masterminds with everybody on the team, right? Whether they've been with us for a day or a year or 3 or 4 years. In fact, we just had one last week and a girl literally went through orientation that morning and then came to the mastermind that night. And so what go ahead.
Can I just pause you right there with what you just said about the, I love the mastermind concept, love the mastermind with your team. I do that myself with the team at the store, but I love the fact that that brand new employee, I mean, the, you know, get your voice heard, be heard is a lot of buzzwords today, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's the theme of inclusivity as well, but what a powerful thing for that brand new person to have a voice.
Exactly.
I'll let you continue.
Yeah, certainly. And so, you know, again, whether you've been with us for a day or a decade, you know, you're invited out. And we invite everybody an opportunity to stand up. Well, first of all, we started by recognizing our core values. So people give shout outs to people for living by the core values. We do it off site. So we normally go, there's a really good Mexican place right here in our parking lot that we go to. And this is an unpaid event as well. I know you'd asked about that earlier, Jeff, about the observation. The mastermind's unpaid. We do bribe them with free food. And I always say, you know, despite anybody's income level, never underestimate the value of free food. And we all got to eat. So it's unpaid. We give them the free food. We bring them out. We recognize the core values. And then everybody goes around one at a time and stands up and says, here's one thing that I think we're doing really well. And here's one thing that I think we need to improve on. So what's the biggest ambiguity? What's the biggest lack of clarity? Or maybe a process that, you know, takes 5 steps that maybe could only take 2 or 3. And so, you know, way back in the days, we started these masterminds and we very quickly began developing systems, processes, best practices, standard operating procedures, all those systems that you need in your business that we still use today, 10 years later. And so, you know, the team effort of the masterminds, it really creates a good sense of ownership. Because now I don't have to be, you know, the person coming with all the decisions. My team actually has a stake in these systems because we're co-creating them together. And there's a lot of pride in that for everybody involved, you know, and the best part of it selfishly is that all this weight was lifted off my shoulders immediately because I now had an empowered team that I gave the freedom to help build a business with me.
Yep. I love that. You know, I do the same. In the retail business, that's the business where I have employees. Everything else I do is me, right? Mm-hmm. I have VAs for that, for my other stuff, but you know, it's the people that I'm growing, the humans that I work with and see daily. And, every other Saturday morning I go in because I have all three together on the sales floor and it's those conversations. What's working? What do we need to improve? And I love that you said improve, not wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Because now that means I got to point a finger at somebody and or myself. Right. Yeah. Which people, a lot of people aren't willing to do, at least in that forum or at all. But it is always about improvement, right? Because you can learn, even if it's not, even if you've made 0 sales of this one thing or had 0 conversions of this other thing, there's an opportunity to learn in that as to why. So it is about improvement. You know, the one mechanism that we've done, we insist on our bookends. We have to start the way we know works and we have to finish the way we know that works, you know, and that subjectivity in the middle, you know, we're dealing a lot in face-to-face. Your team is dealing a lot in a virtual environment, whether that's a phone or a, you know, an e-dialer or whatever. But that subjectivity, it's hard to account for. You have 3 million leads. You can probably have an idea of demographics of who you got, but you just don't know.
Yeah.
So I gave up on, I shouldn't say I gave up. I realized subjectivity exists, but I can create objectivity in how we start and how we finish.
Yeah.
And I just said, ultimately, what that means is when we close, great. When we don't, here's what we need to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because every door swing costs money, whether we sell something or not. Mm-hmm. Every phone call you make out costs money, whether you generate a lead or not.
Yeah.
And I said to my team, I said, so if we make 10 sales and our cost to swing the door was $150 this week, what did it cost to make those sales? And they're like $11.50. I said, no. Because if we let five walk, that $150 on each of those five heads goes to the 10 we did make.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why having zero missed opportunities, that's a KPI we monitor each week. That's why getting that number to zero as best we can is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Because now our CRM with those quotes we follow up with works.
Mm-hmm.
The bookend, how we finish.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's what we did. And I share that because I want people to take it away. Maybe they hear it a little differently. That all of that was born out of this conversation with the team. I knew what I wanted. I said, how do we get there?
Yeah.
Talk to me.
Yeah.
What are you seeing? What do you see your teammate do? How can I support that?
Yeah. It's a great example of being a visionary leader. The vision is yours, and then you empower your people to bring it to life.
Yeah. Man, I've loved our time together. It's like flown by. I'm realizing we're at the top of the hour already.
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. So let's talk, your core, the foundation of things is that five-star experience, that five-star foundation and culture. So we have a few minutes left. Let's touch on that. I think you've obviously built it up, right? It's easy to see what that foundation looks like after getting to chat with you here for about an hour.
Yeah.
But I'll kick it off this way. I say to anybody in my team as well, we say, yes, we have a lot of reviews in that business. We've been 14 years in a row, favorite store to buy from. All that's fantastic. But you know what? Our goal here, we have to make that happen for you. Because if we don't, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
None of it matters.
Yeah.
It's inconsequential that we have over 1,000 handwritten reviews in 2024. And, about 800 online reviews in 2024. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If we give you a one-star experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yep. So I'll turn that over to you to wrap up.
Yeah. So, I mean, the big aha moment for me, I started building this solution in the real estate space. I attended lots of real estate seminars and would speak on stage to help people understand the process that we put people through to take these cold leads and warm them up and turn them into hot commission checks. It's a revenue driven, conversation, and people are very excited about that. And about 7 years ago, I was going to an event. I was set to speak on stage, and then they called me like a month before the event. They're like, "Hey, man, we just had another speaker back out. Can we put you in again on day two? Can you do like a second session?" Like, yeah, I mean, what do you want me to talk about? And they're like, "Well, don't you hire like a lot of like college students, and you actually get them to like stick around? You don't have terrible turnover, and like, don't you always say that's one of your keys to success?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, it is actually." And so they're like, "Why don't you just talk about that?" So I show up to the event and I did more of a conversation about company culture, right? Some of these failures that we had, the lessons that we learned from them, the culture tools that we implemented to our business and the huge impact that it made positively. It's funny because I had been given the talk about converting online leads for years and years and years. And people were like, yeah, I know. I need to work my leads, right? Like there's nothing magical about that. Can I just pay you to do it? That was obviously the presentation. Mm-hmm. It was like, "Hey, let me overwhelm you with all the stuff you got to do, or you can just sign up for us and we'll do it for you." But after I gave this culture talk, man, I had people coming up to me afterwards. I was actually like swarmed off the stage. It was right before break. So I got this swarm as I'm coming off stage, and there's people like, "Oh my gosh, this is incredible. And you made me reflect about this in my business and all these failures that I've had and all these expectations that I haven't made clear and yada, yada." And this one girl's literally like in tears, like, "If you can do this with, work that's, like you said, not sexy. I mean, you're doing the work that other people didn't want to do, and you're hiring a generation of talent that stereotypically doesn't have a great work ethic." I don't know if you've ever heard that before about millennials and Gen Z. Apparently they don't have a great work ethic. That's a generalization, right? And the culture is what you create, right? It's what you magnetically attract people to and magnetically repel the wrong people. And so I thought, okay, I think I'm onto something here. Not only can I help people convert their online leads, but I actually feel like I've got a gift that I can really serve other business owners and leaders and teaching them the importance of company culture and how it's going to attract and retain top quality talent, how that talent is going to then deliver exceptional customer experiences that are going to give you more referral and repeat business that you know what to do with. And then as a business leader, most importantly, is we get into business for freedom, right? We don't get into business to create this prison of our life that we have to show up to every day. We get into business for freedom, whether it's freedom to, you know, get to charities like Mentors International, whether it's freedom to spend, you know, go to your son's football practice, whether that's freedom to, you know, take the whole family to Hawaii for Christmas, whatever that freedom looks like to you, that's what we got into business for. And so having a five-star company culture gives you the freedom to generate more profits in your life, in your business, and, you know, profits of time, profits of money, profits of wealth. Yeah. And so that's something I'm incredibly passionate about now. And so if you go to the website, 5starcompanyculture.com, that's what that's all about. It's essentially the lessons learned from having built this decade old real estate call center. And I'm now working with business leaders and entrepreneurs to help them gain that freedom in their life so that they have that rock solid foundation to build their empire upon.
Yeah, love it. You know what you just demonstrated there? I heard a refreshed or maybe updated definition of competence, right? Competence, there's two definitions of it. There's what we learn to do and do it well, but then there's what we're really good at, and it's just ingrained in us. It's like a mm-hmm. fiber in our DNA. Mm-hmm. And obviously that culture building, that passion for leading others and building others up it's that what's in your DNA. And that's why people were so attracted to that second speech, mm-hmm. right? Because it was obvious you're competent in being able to generate leads and turn leads into high commission checks, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like that's the learned competence.
Yeah, exactly.
But the ingrained competence, the subconscious competence, I think is, and we'll wrap up this way, and I'll get your thought on it as we wrap up. That's what empowers people. That's how you build humans. Because mm-hmm. what your subconscious competence isn't mine. Mm-hmm. It's not Chris, our producer's fantastic producer at Cast Ahead. Talk about competence and ingrained competence. He's got it. So if you need mm-hmm. something great for a show, reach out to him. But that's what we need to share as leaders, because everybody around us doesn't have that same thing, but there is something within their DNA that is highly competent. As a leader, we got to extract it.
Exactly.
I'll let you wrap up on that.
Yeah. I mean, you said it best, right? That's what having a team is all about, is you bet on people's strengths, and then you delegate out the weaknesses, you know, because that weakness to one person is a strength to another person. And, it's just a harmonious balance of all these different people with their unique insights, their unique experiences, their opinions, their desires. You know, that's another problem that I see a lot of times in real estate, is people want to build out this big mega agent team, and they're like, I'm going to have this many agents, and they're going to do this many deals, blah, blah, blah. Like, Did you ever run that past them? Did you ever let them know that was their goal? Like, that's not how goals work. Goals really need to come from within. You know, it's like, well, this agent maybe wants to sell 40 homes a year, and this other agent maybe wants to sell 20 homes a year. And if it works within the structure of the business, and they're all, you know, same value driven, purpose driven members, then that's okay. You know, it's about figuring out, you know, it's not the one size fits all attitude towards business. It's about custom tailoring, you know, what your solution is and how you can both, you know, be cohesive in your desire to reach your goals and dreams. The business's goals and dreams, your goals and dreams as a leader, and then their goals and dreams as a contributor to the business. You know, and they've got wives, and they've got families, and they've got kids, and they've got parents. And so, you know, what does that actually look like? That's really one of the most important aspects of leadership, is being able to tap into that and unleash those superpowers that people have.
Yeah. Love it. We rolled into our conversation on the word superpower for my friend Brandon Brittingham, and we're going to roll out on the word superpower. Man, you've certainly got it. You've demonstrated it. People can get a hold of you. Rockerbox is your company. We've had that on the screen. We have it in the show notes. Rockerbox.com, 5starcompanyculture.com would be the places to go to please connect with Josh. We have his social media channels on here. He's on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. I think you're on all of them, right?
Yep.
And all of that is made easy here. Again, talk about competence. My amazing producer, my right-hand guy, Chris, and producing these great shows. He does all this great stuff for me. His info's in the show notes as well. So we make it easy on you. If you've loved something you've heard, share it, connect to me, to Josh, to Chris, my wonderful producer. I'd love for that connection to happen as a result of our time together today. Josh, thank you so much for stopping by the show. Really appreciate you. Anything that I left out as far as getting in touch with you?
I mean, that's pretty much it. All the social handles are culture is the key, because it is the key to your more profits and freedom. And would love to connect with anybody and collaborate and share from any experiences that I've had. So
fantastic.
Thanks for the opportunity, Jeff. This has been wonderful. And Chris, the production on the back end is really, really, really awesome. I've enjoyed watching the show here as we go live.
Yeah, very good. I always enjoy it too. And hey, thank you so much. Take care down there in Texas. Go Aggies, right?
Yeah.
And when you get that big rivalry game as the conference is realigned, I'll be rooting for you, because I don't have a dog in the hut. So
I appreciate it. All right.
Very good. Thanks, hey, thank you, Josh, for stopping by. Everybody else, have a wonderful week. And we'll see you next time on the Big Ticket Life. Take care.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of the Big Ticket Life. You've heard from another amazing guest living their own big ticket life, and now it's time to live yours. First, I'd love for you to take me up on my free gift to you. Find your gift at gift.bigticketlife.live. That's gift.bigticketlife.live. See, all your life you've been told what is and what isn't possible by the loudest voices from the cheapest seats. It's time to finally do life and business on your terms. Sure, you've heard similar things, but without clarity on what can be done, it's easy to have your customers, employees, maybe even partners, and your spouse keep you from truly living a big ticket life. My big ticket methods shift you into that investor seat in your business, away from commodity and away from competition, into a market of one, so you can finally live your own big ticket life. So my gift to you is for you to book your discovery call today, where we'll uncover first the CHEVO behaviors, those chief everything officer behaviors that hold you back, and why moving into the investor seat in your own business is critical. Two, we'll uncover the premium position that's up for grabs right now in your market that you're missing out on. And three, which big ticket methodologies are just waiting to be dropped into your business to explode your sales and profits. So again, thanks for listening to this episode. I'd love for you to take action right now, accept this gift, book your call, go to gift.thebigticketlife.live. Again, that's gift.thebigticketlife.live.